Turn your Bibles to 2 Corinthians chapter 6, 2 Corinthians chapter 6. Begin the first of the chapter and read through verse 4. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, beginning verse 1. Working together with him then, we appeal to you not to receive the grace of God in vain. For he says, in a favorable time I listened to you, in the day of salvation I've helped you. Behold, now is the favorable time, behold, now is the day of salvation. We put no obstacle in anyone's way, so that no fault may be found with our ministry, but as servants of God, we commend ourselves in every way. Last week, we talked about credibility. Your credibility, not the person sitting next to you, not your wife or your husband or your parents, your credibility. And you might be thinking, well, my credibility, I'm a pretty credible person. But we're talking about your credibility as a messenger of the gospel to others. Your credibility. Are you a credible messenger of the gospel to other people? Because you live it before you speak it. The message of the gospel has been proven, all right? It's credible. It's been proven by signs and wonders and Jesus being raised from the dead. God put his stamp of approval on the gospel. But we focus then on how are we credible as messengers of that gospel to other people. Because if we're not living what we're speaking about Christ, and our conduct is not lining up with our confession about Christ, then we can, as Paul says in verse 3, be an obstacle to others receiving that message, because we can place a fault between them and the gospel in the conduct that we give them. We're ambassadors of our King. And if we don't love our King, it shows up in our life. Other people see how much we either love our King or despise our King. People know how much you either like your boss or despise your boss. When people work around you, they know if you like them or if you hate them. They know whether you like her or if you don't like her. People know if you like your parents or don't like your parents. People know if you act towards them in a despising way or if you love them to death. And it shows them how you interact with them. It shows them how you roll your eyes when they turn around and they tell you something. People know when you love someone, and people know when you don't. And people know when you love God, and people know when you don't. There's some of you who love certain sports teams, and you have their logo on flags in your yard, or their favorite shirt, or stickers on your car, and you spend money to go watch games, and you've done this for years, and people know that you love that team because they have observed your behavior over the years. I mean, if that were just to say Braves or Cardinals or Wildcats, people in this very room could come to mind. You know them as followers of that team. They represent their team. Do people know that you love the Lord as much as you love them? There are hobbies that we all have and that we're known for. We can spend a pretty good amount of money and time and resources on those hobbies, and people know what we love doing because they have observed how much we love doing those things. But do people see and know that I love the Lord more? Paul was a tent maker. He was a tent maker by trade. People knew him as a tent maker. He had talents and abilities and hobbies that we probably don't even know about. But he loved the Lord more than any of those things. And this is going to be a constant theme over the next few verses, that what you say and what you do have to line up. What you confess about Christ has to line up with your conduct. If you say that you love the Lord, then you're going to do what he says. Jesus says the exact same thing. If you love me, you'll keep my commandments. And if your life is not being lived for Jesus, the message of Christ that comes out of your mouth about him can be hindered by the obstacles of your life. For example, if you invite someone to church, but up until that point of you inviting them to church, you have acted like you've never been to church in your life, or opened a Bible in your life, and you've cussed like a sailor and been profane with your speech and said all manner of evil things every single time that person was around, and it raises an eyebrow that you've invited them to church, then there's probably a gap between what you claim to believe and how you act. I was talking to somebody last week about people who post everything in the world about church online, about Jesus, and they post verses and this or that, and they don't even go to church. They seem like they go to church on Facebook. They seem like they're a Christian on Facebook, but they're not in real life. They're faithful in making people believe that they are faithful. Now just let that sink in. They're faithful in making people believe that they are faithful. And an enormous amount of energy is devoted to making people believe that they're faithful, when in actuality they are not. They're faithful Christians only on Facebook, because the message they speak doesn't line up with the reality that they live. See, it's not just the Sunday part of your life that is to be commended, or is to be proven, or is to be seen and manifested when it comes to being for Christ. And it's not just the Sunday part of your life that is to show God glory. It's every day of your life. As Paul's going to say, it's everything in your life. You cannot miss credibility because it shows up everywhere in your life. It's a proven manifestation everywhere in your life. If you are credible when it comes to a messenger of Christ, it's going to show up where you are. And this brings us to chapter 6, verse 4. As servants of God, we commend ourselves in every way. One translation says, in everything we commend ourselves as servants of God, or in every way we show ourselves or prove ourselves to be the servants of God. And it's not that Paul is commending himself to pat himself on the back and say, look at me, I'm such a great Christian. He's not pointing to himself, because he knows that all this is from God. He's not saying, I'm such an awesome servant of God. Paul is telling the people that are around him, look at his life and see how God has transformed everything in that life. Because he's the servant of God now. He's the servant of Christ now. Everything that's happened to him has been to God's glory. You can look. And back in chapter 5 and verse 12, Paul says the exact opposite. He says, we're not trying to commend ourselves to you. And what Paul's talking about in that context is that he's not using words to say, look at how awesome I am. He's not using words to get their attention. Paul is saying, look at my life. Don't just look at what I speak. Don't just look at what I say. Look at my life. And we're going to find out that life had a lot of sacrifices in the next few verses. There's a lot of manifestation in Paul's life of how much he loved the Lord and how much he loved his gospel. Paul was commended as a servant of God, as an ambassador of Jesus Christ, because of how he lived and represented Jesus every single day. It wasn't that he was just telling people about how much he loved the truth of the gospel, how much he loved the church, how much he loved the Lord. He showed them how much he did by enduring trials and afflictions and hardships and calamities and beatings and imprisonments and riots and labors and sleepless nights and hunger and the life he lived in purity and in patience and in kindness and in genuine love and in truthful speech, which we're going to go over all of those things over the next 3 weeks. Paul isn't saying or announcing that he's a servant of God. He's inviting you to look at his life and know that he's a servant of God. He's not saying, look at me, and he's not using his words to say, I am such a great servant of God. He's saying, look at my life, and you will find that I am blameless when it comes to me being a servant of God. You don't go through all these things that Paul's talking about, the shipwrecks and the hunger and all that. You don't go through those things if you don't love what you're going through, if you don't love what it is that you're doing them for. Paul showed that he loved the Lord and the gospel more than his own life. And Paul had immense credibility when it came to preaching and teaching. He had immense credibility when it came to speaking the message of Christ. And a credibility that came from how he lived his life, not just what he spoke. Now, to slow down a little bit, Paul says, in everything, or in every way, we show ourselves to be servants of God. In everything. Now, that's one word, this little bitty word in the original language, P-A-S, pas. And what that word means, it encompasses all of Paul's world. That one little word, all of Paul's world, manifested and showed that he was a servant of God. Everything. So the main thing about the structure of the phrase is that there is nothing in the life of Paul that would discredit his ministry. There's nothing in the life of Paul that would be an obstacle for somebody looking at him to say, that guy doesn't know what he's talking about. That guy doesn't love the Lord that he's talking about. There's no obstacle in the life of Paul keeping people from seeing Jesus. And there's nothing in the life of Paul that doesn't accent the gospel that he's speaking. You can look at Paul's life with every microscope, every telescope from far away, every type of examination, and it brings you to the same conclusion every single time, in every single part of Paul's life, that he loves the Lord and he loves the message of Jesus. It's that Jesus is who is being lived for above everything else, to the highest degree of Paul's life. Not just his words, but how he lives his life. So that little word, pause, is the same word that you know very well from Mark 16 and verse 15. Go into all the world. How much of that does it leave out? Same word that Paul uses here. In everything, we show ourselves to be servants of God in everything. It describes every animal in a herd. How many does that leave out? None. It's used to describe when God comes in judgment, how all will be judged by Him. How many does that leave out? So getting back to our credibility, how much of your life has been left out from the Lord? Paul says there's none. And you shouldn't say there's any either. To use the language of chapter 5 and verse 20, Paul's an ambassador, a representative of Jesus Christ. Wherever you look in his life, he's going to be a representative of Jesus and how much he loves the King that he represents. So this is not Paul using the words to boast. This is not Paul, building himself up some great character of the Bible. This is Paul saying that my life, the entirety of my life, fully, wholly, altogether, in every way, in all things, in all respects, it will show you that I am a servant of God and that I love the Lord. Can the same be said about you? Paul's life was a glass house. Everyone could see into every corner and come to the conclusion every single time. Do you know one of the reasons why the Corinthians, this group that was trying to discredit Paul in 2 Corinthians that he's writing to, do you know why they were so effective in trying to discredit Paul? He wasn't there. He was in Ephesus, other places doing the Lord's work. So while he was away, the Corinthians are like, you know that Paul? You know what I heard about that Paul? But you know, if Paul was there, there's no way they could have said anything. They could have looked at his life and said, there's no way that's right. Paul says, I'm a person who devotes their entire life to the Lord. This is why I wanted to slow down on this, because it comes back to us. We have to ask the question and answer the question. That's the hard part. Is there something in my life, some area of my life, some activity of my life where someone could see that I don't love the Lord? Where I don't want to be his servant. That what I'm doing is something that my king would not agree with or want me to represent him with. Paul said, in everything, in every way, we're commended to be servants of God. So think about it for a second. What have I said this week that would show that I don't love the Lord more than anything else? What conflict may I have gotten in this week where I didn't show that Jesus is more important than everything else? Have I treated my spouse, my kids? Have I interacted with people? Or what happened at work? Or what happened at school? Or in my house? As servants of God, have I proven myself in every way? And it's not just saying that you're a Christian or saying that you love the Lord. It's the evidence that's behind it in everything that you do. It's what's outside. Not just what is inside. There was nothing in Paul's life that would not bring God glory. Is there something in your life? Could you invite people to examine your entire life? Your playlist, your language, what you watch, how you talk, what you say, how you say it, your relationships, what you do on dates, when you're dating. Could you come to the conclusion that all that points to God? This is what Paul says. In everything, we show ourselves to be ministers of God, servants of God. And everything means everything. There's nothing that is left out. Everything means everything. When I was writing the sermon, I didn't know what I was going to preach on this afternoon, on Monday. I knew it was going to be about something we were going over right now. But an illustration of King David came up when I was studying that just nailed this point home for me. So we're going to be studying 2 Samuel chapter 11 and 12 this afternoon when you come back, all of you. You remember David Bathsheba. You remember the story, right? David was king of Israel. Armies were out fighting. He was back in the palace. He was on a high place, and he was watching in this high place, and his eyes focused, as the word means, focused upon a woman who was bathing on a nearby rooftop. Long story short, he committed adultery with Bathsheba. She was married, had a husband, and David took her. And David kept on living like nothing happened. Even had her husband killed by sending him to the front lines and commanding that a company that he was in withdraw from him so that he was killed in battle so that he could have Bathsheba all to himself. David kept on living like no one knew his sin. Does that sound familiar? David kept on living like no one knew about his sin. Committing some sin during the week that flies in the face of God, but then acting like everything is fine on Sunday. Then Nathan the prophet shows up. We're going to talk about the timeline, which fascinates me, and I didn't know the timeline of this. Nathan tells David a story, King David, about a sheep that was adored and loved by this poor man and his family, and the sheep was taken by this rich man who was having a party, and it was killed and eaten. David was enraged and angry, and I can't believe that someone would do that. Nathan looks at him and says, "You are the man who killed the sheep, David." David's been in the... He's forgiven. But Nathan says something very interesting. In 2 Samuel 12 and verse 14, after he's been forgiven, after all has been wiped away by God, this is what Nathan says. "By your deeds you have given great occasion to the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme." Did you notice that? By your deeds, by your conduct, you have given great opportunity to the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme the very Lord that you are supposed to be serving. And to this day, people will still bring up David, a man after God's own heart, and say, "If God uses a man like David, who is a murderer and an adulterer, then I don't want to serve that God." Same way with David's enemies, when they found out that the visible representation of God's people on the earth, the ruler of Israel, was an adultering murderer. It gave them reason to oppose God even more. It gave them reason to say all manner of insults and mock against a God who would use a person like that. And you know the same conversation. All those people who will never go to church because of all the hypocrites, right? I know you've heard that reason. I know you've heard that. "I'm not going to come to church because all those people are hypocrites." And what Nathan says is that we can give them a manifested evidence. We can give them opportunity to even insult the God that we serve if we do not conduct ourselves in the right way. We can lack credibility when we don't live what we speak. When we don't act like God is King, and we have conduct that comes up into our lives that doesn't match our confession that Jesus is Lord, it gives people fuel to question and to blaspheme the very God that we serve. Question the church that we love. Question the ministry of this church. Question the motives of this church. When our conduct is opposite of commendable, as Paul says, there's an obstacle that has been put in front of what we confess and what we proclaim to other people. David's actions of his life gave the enemies of God, the Philistines and all the other people, all the other nations that were around them, gave reason to scorn the very God that David was supposed to be serving. And there can be something in your life that does the same. If you are not living what you are speaking, acting what you are saying with your mouth. And over the next few Sundays, Paul goes into 9 different evidences, 9 different outward commendation in 3 sets of 3. And we can go back and look historically at what happened to Paul during these things. He looks at 3 sets of 3, and he says, "These things manifest themselves in my life to show you how much I love God, to show you how much I'm a servant of God, to show you how much I love the gospel message." And hopefully we'll go through those over the next few weeks. But here's where I want to end this lesson. In every part of your life, every part, not just Sunday, not just the part you let people see, not just the Facebook part where you edit all the stuff out that you don't want people to see, in every part of your life, here's your question. Are you using that to prove that you're a servant of God? We can go in so many directions with this, with so many different age groups of Christians. If you're a young person still living at home and your mom's still doing your laundry and your parents are still paying your bills, there's your category. Okay, if you're one of those, do you honor your father and mother? That's one of the ways that you prove that your life is being lived as a servant of God. Do you honor your father and mother? Obeying those who have the rule over you. That is your category. If you're a teenager or 20-something, maybe just getting out on your own, what happens at your apartment? What happens in your dorm room? What happens on the weekend? Is it conduct that would show that you're a servant of God? Is it something that would prove that you're a servant of God, that you're ministering to God, that you're glorifying God? Is it commendable what you are doing, that you're a servant of God and not of yourself? For those of you who are just married, a lot of couples just had kids. When you're at home, does your activity show that you're both servants of Jesus? Wives, do you respect your husband? We won't go into that. Husbands, do you live with your wives in an understanding way? We'll get into that either. Do you give an example to your kids of how to be a Christian father or mother? How to be a Christian aunt or uncle? For those of you who are older, your conversations give evidence to your greatest concerns and priorities. Let me say that again. Your conversations, what you talk about the most, give way to your greatest concerns and your greatest focus. Maybe you talk about your retirement more than you talk about the Bible. Maybe you're concerned more about politics and finances than you are about faith and biblical things. Is there anything in your life that would be an obstacle from someone hearing the message of Christ from your mouth? Because Paul says in everything, we are to show ourselves to be servants of God. In everything. To put this in eternal perspective, is there anything that you would not want God to show and reveal on the judgment day? Everything exposed, whether good or evil. Everything done in this body, whether it was to God's glory or whether it was selfish or sinful. If there is anything that you don't want other people to see or find out in your conduct, then that is something that can keep you from speaking to someone who knows about that conduct, someone who sees that conduct, someone that you may be dragging into that conduct. And when you speak the name of Jesus to that person, then your conduct has already become an obstacle before you ever tell them the message of the gospel. In everything, we show ourselves to be servants of Jesus Christ. There is one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father who is above all and through all and in you all. So you've confessed Christ. You've been washed in His blood. You're a baptized believer. Sanctified. Where's your proof? The fruits and the actions and the deeds that come from your life are now evidence of what Christ has done, are now evidence of how Christ has transformed you, or it's evidence of how Christ has not. Make sure everything in your life commends you towards God, because He is the one you are to be glorifying. He is the one that you are to be serving and ministering. And if you are not, then you can come to your King and He will forgive you as your Savior. And I hope you'll do that this morning as together we stand.